Hello, and welcome to the first episode of FinTech Mix from Say Hello to Audio. I'm Nat Barker, your host, and over the coming series, I'll be delving into the FinTech world, speaking to up-and-comers and movers and shakers from across the industry about their working lives. The idea is to find out what we can learn about FinTech from these talented individuals. If you're just starting out in a career in FinTech, maybe you're an intern or a graduate, or if you're an executive at a household name, you'll be sure to pick up something valuable. I myself know pretty much nothing about FinTech, but that's not a mistake by the producers. Basically, if you can explain it to me, you can explain it to anyone. My guest today is Harry Horsfall of Luno. Harry, thanks very much for joining us for the inaugural FinTech Mix podcast. Congratulations, you're officially a trailblazer. How you doing?
Awesome, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm good. I mean, obviously, we're in London, so it's sunny. So it'd be rude not to mention that. It's Friday, so I'm in relatively high spirits. And thanks for Suds for dragging me along. I like being a trailblazer, a guinea pig, as it were.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah, and you're right. A sunny Friday afternoon in London is, you're not allowed to complain in those circumstances. It's just the rules. So are you speaking to me from home right now?
Yeah. So we've been at home for a year, which is pretty mad. And yeah, I'm missing the pub, obviously, but hopefully all my audio is good and hopefully we can do this again in a studio in season three.
Yeah, what? Meet face to face? I'm not sure about that. I think I'm done meeting people face to face.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be Zoom until my grave now, I think.
Too much now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Can you start off just by telling me a little bit about Luno?
Yeah, cool. Awesome. So Luno is a sort of, I guess you, in the intro, you talked about FinTech. I guess I never actually wanted to get into FinTech, as it were. I was really excited to get into crypto. And I think it's as the two industries have sort of converged, crypto has suddenly turned into FinTech. If we look at, you know, the likes of PayPal, Revolut, etc., all adding crypto. So Luno is a global exchange. And what it really is doing is offering people's first step into crypto. So making it as easy to go from fiat to crypto in as safe and quick as possible. We've got over 7 million customers across 43 countries. We've got big expansion plans into the US. We're predominantly based in, you know, the developing world, as well as a big push in the UK at the moment. So there's a lot of exciting things happening. And we are part of the DCG group, which owns Grayscale, CoinDesk, and is a bit of a crypto powerhouse. So okay. There's a lot happening.
So it's interesting, you've touched on something I'm not aware of there, which is a kind of convergence of cryptocurrencies and fintech as kind of sectors operating in the same space. Is there a bit of a kind of a rivalry there with the kind of the crypto world and the fintech world, do you think?
No, not at all. I think if you're like pro crypto, then you're pro adoption. And adoption comes when these lovely shiny FinTech, you know, if we look back at like what Monzo set out to do, so I think I'm Monzo user number 7,000. So I joined Monzo with like a real high hope that it was going to make things better. And I think that it has made a lot of things better, but essentially it's just a shiny new interface of what is the existing system.
Okay. And you're looking to shake that up further.
We want a whole new system, not just it's amazing. You can ping your friends instantly on Monzo, but you know, that's the existing financial system. What we want is a revolution and an evolution of a new system that is much better, much fairer, much more open. And I think that's kind of where the crypto, but of course, if that's too scary and no one is using it and it's just sitting in a very dark corner of the internet, that's also not what we want. So I do think there is a beautiful moment when these two fintech and crypto converge, and it's just a sort of deep down, I don't think people will be talking about crypto as such. They'll just be using it for their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, sure. And how did you get into crypto yourself? How did your interest in the area start?
Yeah, so I mean, it was quite a while ago now. I was messing around with it when I was at uni, which was just over 10 years ago. But it was actually in about 2013 that I was running a music festival. And at the same time, I was interning for a tech conference. Okay. And they were like, oh, guys, you're young, you organize the Bitcoin stage. We met this guy called Paul Gordon, who runs CoinScrum, which is, you know, one of the top communities in London for Bitcoin. Been running since 2012. And so he was the one that really explained everything. And I was like, wow. And of course, the next day, went in as hard as I could, told everyone about it. I was like, wow, I found out about this exciting new space, this exciting revolution. And at the time, it was under $300, $500. And I was like, everyone go all in. And then, of course, it hit its peak a few weeks later and then crashed 90%. I was like, that's a real crypto moment. You haven't felt crypto until you've had 90% drops. But of course, over the next sort of few years, it's recovered. And recently, it was one Bitcoin was $60,000. So buying those initial $300 was an incredible investment from that point. But of course, there's been three waves.
Yeah, wow. Are you able to, can I put you on the spot and ask you to explain to me, an imbecile, how it is that cryptocurrencies work exactly?
Yes, of course. I think there's three points there. I think, firstly, you don't always need to know exactly how everything works. You know, if we look at most people that are using Facebook, do they really know how the servers are picking up the back end and all of the data transfers happening? They like the nice user-friendly, easy, clickable buttons. So that's the first point. And like, you don't always need to understand the massive details of how things works. But how crypto works is it's really like basically machines are constantly verifying every transaction, which means you don't need a third party. And what this allows is it means that you don't need to trust third parties and anyone can access the system. And yeah, so it's basically like an open source ledger, and its main thing is allowing sort of digital payments, because to stop the double spend issue. So essentially it's almost like having a physical file. And once that physical file is gone, if you imagine like a Word doc, if I send you the Word doc on email, I've still got a copy of that Word doc. What sort of Bitcoin especially does is if I send that Word doc to you, that Word doc is no longer in my inbox. It's allowing without a third party to make sure that things are final. And of course, when we say crypto, there's lots of different types of crypto, you know? So yeah, we could talk all day about that.
Yeah, I'm sure there are several podcasts dedicated to how cryptocurrencies work. So what's the problem you're trying to solve at Luno, if that makes sense? Like, what's the sort of thrust of the business?
So there's lots of problems that we're trying to solve, and I think we're trying to upgrade the world and help people that, you know, there's a lot of helping the underbanked, especially in like Nigeria and South Africa. In the UK, we're trying to make it as easy to access crypto as quickly as possible in three steps. Compared to some of the earlier onboarding experiences, this, you know, Luno really helps you do it in three easy steps with a really trusted site. We're also helping people get sort of like, you know, now we're bringing out all of our interest products and people are getting sort of 7% interest on their stable coins. That's like, wow, that's something better than the traditional system. And I think lots of people use it for global transfers.
Yeah, sure. That's really interesting, actually. I've never thought of it in that way. You mentioned they're kind of helping the underbanked, I think was the term you used. So do you think that crypto has got the power to be a kind of a force for kind of greater financial access to people who are maybe a bit locked out at the moment? And do you think there's a risk that it could become monopolized by big business and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I hope it doesn't become monopolized by business. I do think it does open, you know, it is a leveler in the sense that we're dealing with a whole generation where everyone has a smartphone, but not everyone has a bank account. And so as it becomes easier and easier to open up an account, especially in the developing world, open up an account with Luno in three clicks, and then all of a sudden you've got access to the financial ecosystem that Bitcoin allows you to have, and which is borderless. So that's a huge leveler, especially in a global world when you can accept business anywhere on the internet. So I think that is a massive leveler. Will big business get involved? Yes, we've seen that rapidly with Facebook trying to develop their own crypto. You know, PayPal have just recently announced. Twitter, Jack Dorsey, he's always been a big Bitcoin fan. Elon Musk, he's now swapping Teslas for Bitcoin. You know, that's a watershed moment. The moment Elon Musk is getting involved, if we look at Tesla in 2008, when he bought it, he wasn't the first person to make electric cars at that moment, but he picked that moment that it was advanced enough that it was ready for him to add his rumble behind it to get to where it is today. And I feel like this is, I don't know if you know, but Musk bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin with Tesla's money.
Never heard of him.
And then he's also he's now accepting, you know, actual Bitcoin for Teslas. And the interesting thing here is that he's not just converting it straight into fiat currencies like USDC, US dollar or pounds, like that's a fiat government currency. And so the fact that he's actually accepting Bitcoin and holding it is that moment that it will hold its value, because there's no sell pressure, because he's just instantly turning it back into USDC.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of a guy called James Howells from Newport? Does that ring any bells to you?
Not off the top of my head.
This is one of my favourite news stories from the past year. So James Howes is from Newport in South Wales. In the year 2009, he bought 7,500 bitcoins for virtually nothing. And then he accidentally threw away the hard drive in the year 2013, meaning that all this bitcoin is now sitting in a rubbish dump somewhere in South Wales. And it's worth, get this, £210 million.
Yeah.
And he's been trying to convince Newport Council to let him dig up the rubbish tip to find his hard drive in exchange for, I think, a quarter of the money. But they're not letting him. I would advise anyone to Google that. There's quite a funny video of him standing next to the rubbish tip saying, oh, I don't think there's any chance I'm going to find it, is there?
Yeah, I mean, you're so right. A few of those horror stories that are out there from the early days of Bitcoin. And there's one very famous day that we all celebrate. It's the day that someone bought the first Bitcoin transaction and they bought two pizzas for 10,000 Bitcoin.
And about how much is 10,000 Bitcoin now? Well, if that guy's...
Yeah, 10,000 times 60K.
I mean, I guess if that guy's is 7,500 and his is worth 210 million, then you're talking over a quarter of a billion pounds, aren't you?
It's
crazy.
Yeah, so I mean, so it was very weird seeing this quite early on and actually seeing how long it's taken for everyone to adapt. We still have lots of countries trying to ban it. There's other countries like, let's say, Japan, Switzerland, Miami, who have all been like, we're moving on this. But then there's other countries like Nigeria, which are like, trying to be like, whoa, no, I actually want to ban this. So it's very interesting seeing a global response to something that localized response to a globalized issue.
Yeah, definitely. I just hope the pizzas were really nice. They'd have to be really, really nice. I'm still not sure it would cut it. Even if you've got stuff crust, it's still not going to cut it, is it?
No.
Harry, am I right in saying you work in the sort of marketing and events sort of side of Luno? Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And so I've been working in the media and sort of the YouTube Luno.
Okay, cool. And sort of, can you describe to me how important is marketing for a company like Luno?
I think marketing for Luno is massively important, and it's one of the things that, you know, as an early player in the space, we've invested a lot in our marketing team. And I think one of the biggest issues facing the crypto space is trust. And there's no better way than building trust by continually making a lot of the educational, you know, I guess taking a step back, what even is marketing at Luno? And it's a mixture of like education, in the sense that we're educating our customers what Bitcoin is, how to use it, where it's going, why it's important. It's a mixture of highlighting how our products and our offerings, and, you know, so some more of that sort of performance marketing. And then, of course, it's just, of course, building our brand. So when you see that the Luno brand around, that you can trust it. And I think that's something that we've invested in heavily over the last few years. And I think it's something that we're building over the years.
Okay, great. And can you talk me through your average day? Like, is there anything in particular you're focusing on at the moment? Any projects you're working on?
Yep. So we're making a lot of, so we just hit, I don't know, 14,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. We're building out our sort of educational content as well as other shows. We've got a lot of out of home advertising going on around. I don't know if you've seen a London bus.
Yes.
If you say, okay, you've seen a London bus. Have you seen a London bus with our ad on?
Yes, that is what I was saying yes to. Sorry, I wasn't just saying
yes. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that actually worked out really well. Just for those that haven't seen it, it says, if you're seeing Bitcoin in a bus, it's time to buy. We put that on at about $17,000 and it's now $60,000. So if someone took that advice, great. Of course, never. It's not financial advice, and always do your own research, etc. But it was a bit tongue in cheek because some people would be like, is that a top signal? Yeah, no, I think so. That's helping drive awareness. I think the UK is still a growth market. We're still pretty new in the UK. We launched about a year ago, fully launched. Again, it's about building that trust. You know, we've got some really exciting things happening.
Whilst you're giving out financial advice, Harry, I'm joking. I know you're not. But there's a sign outside my local corner shop which says you can buy Bitcoin there. Would you advise buying Bitcoin from a corner shop?
I'm guessing it would be like buying anything at a corner shop, probably quite convenient and probably quite expensive. So, but yeah, I mean, like there's lots of different ways to do it. And I don't know, it depends what you need it for, I guess. If you need it urgently.
I'm not at liberty to tell you that.
if you need it urgently, then maybe, I mean, like there's varying different ways to get to to create a Bitcoin position, depending on your knowledge. If you're advanced, you can take a position on an exchange. If Luno offers a really easy way, sort of similar to a Coinbase or a crypto.com, sort of click and buy. I haven't actually bought Bitcoin from a corner shop yet, but I know that you can. I think they're like more like Bitcoin ATMs.
Okay. Yeah. And it's probably quite a smart analogy, quite a smart descriptor you use, I think. Convenient, but more expensive. Just like if you're buying a pint of milk from your corner shop.
Yeah, exactly. So it would be, I'm sure it'd be quite convenient, but I'm sure you'd pay for the privilege. But it's exciting. And I think we're still very much at like day one. You know,
I think
people are lazy, aren't they? In the sense that, is this a lot better than what I already have? And I think what we're really lucky with it, sitting here in London in the UK, is that our currency is relatively stable. We can get paid like a monthly wage of £1,000 and we can go to sleep and we still have £1,000. I think if you look at other places in the world, let's say look at Turkey recently or Syria, their currencies have been like massive inflation, and therefore actually holding Bitcoin is a store of value for them.
Mm. Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it sounds like there are quite a lot of real world events that are kind of affecting your business at the moment and the things that you guys are having to keep an eye on. Is that, do you have to have a sort of one eye on current affairs a lot of the time?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think current affairs can affect our business, whether it's governments changing their so we're 100% pro regulation. Like regulation is like, we're building a business for the next 30 years. And so as a result, sometimes maybe we haven't always been the first to move into certain markets at certain speeds because we're so pro-regulation.
And so
obviously like current affairs and current things affect it. But I think when you're such a global company, you can't let everything affect you. You know, you just got to keep going on. Yeah, like I think one thing that's definitely affected everyone is, you know, America printing $1.9 trillion out of thin air. Yeah, for context, the whole Bitcoin market cap is only $1 trillion.
So, if
the first time ever, if the last 10 years, everyone's been like, Harry, why is Bitcoin not a scam? Why does Bitcoin have value? Why does Bitcoin work? How does Bitcoin work? Tell me all of these answers. And for the last 10 years, we've defended it along those points. But for the first time, everyone's like, hang on, America just printed $1.9 trillion out of thin air. How does that work? Where's the value there? Why are we bothering to pay tax and bothering to work when they can just print money like that out of thin air? And for the first time ever, I think people have really seen the value of something, of Bitcoin. 21 million coins, 7 billion people. When you divide that by each person, it's like less than 0.2 each. And so I think for the first time ever, people have seen, wow, actually holding this 0.... You know, and another big important point I forgot to mention is when we talk about Bitcoin, people are thinking, oh, that's quite scary. $60,000. I'm sitting here with like 33p left in my Monzo after London salaries and London rent. But when we're talking about Bitcoin, it's divisible into thousands of tiny pieces. So you don't need a whole Bitcoin. And that's actually what a Satoshi is.
Okay.
So it can go into tiny little bits. So that as we a Satoshi.
No, I've not heard that before.
So a sat, I think it's, I'm quite dyslexic, so don't quote me on this, but I think it's 1 millionth Bitcoin.
Okay. All right, interesting. Yeah.
And so I think as we get further on in the lifespan, we'll talk about like, oh, that Uber was 30k sats. Can you ping me 10k sats? And that will be the terminology, because the days of people holding a whole Bitcoin will be so gone, because there will be like 200k, 500k, 5 million. Who knows where they'll be, but we'll still be using the sats, or we'll be using a different sort of currency like a stable coin.
How has the pandemic affected Luno and crypto more generally?
I think like massively, the pandemic has been massively tough on everyone. And I think it's been tough on our culture as a company that was like very like team led, spent a lot of time together. But so I think the culture really suffered. And I think, especially because we continue to grow and like quite a few people have left and loads of people have joined and no one's, so I think that part has been challenging, but we're working on that. I think the exciting thing is the massive growth that we've had. Crypto by definition is global. We've got offices in Malaysia, Australia, Singapore, London, Nigeria, and America. So like we were basically global anyway. So actually the fact that sped up our move to a sort of decentralized organization has actually shown that we can move really quickly. I also think in terms of like the amount of people that have taken an interest in it because of everyone's been at home, so they've had a bit more maybe disposable income to just try out investing instead of going to the pub. So I think that's helped. And I think we've grown. And of course, we're affected by market cycles. And at the moment, we're sort of midway through a massive bull run. For context, this time last year, Bitcoin was $5,000. This time today, it's $57,000. So we're like over 10 times in a year. So I think obviously as an on-ramp, we'll often feel the upside and the downside of that. My first few months, we were marketing in at the start of the long bear run, and that was a tough time. But yeah, I think the pandemic has shown that actually we don't really need to be in the office. And the only reason we want to be in the office is to get collaboration. So
yeah,
I think
finding
that hybrid of work from whenever you want, but then also have that little bit of collab when you need it, some drinks, the ability to walk over to someone and be like, oh, I'm really struggling. Can you help me on this? And I think you do miss that at home.
Yeah, I guess the kind of ability to have that kind of instant back and forth in a way that's just not the same over written messages.
Yeah, exactly. I think it really is. And I think it makes you feel connected to your core. I mean, it's also quite funny seeing everyone in their bedroom. And it definitely makes people individual.
It's fun seeing what people's houses are like.
Yeah, exactly. My girlfriend's often like coming in the middle of my Zoom meetings and she's met my team. It's very personal. And I think I missed the dopamine of like closing your laptop at 5 o'clock. So the whereabouts in London, that our office is uphill in the morning and downhill on the way there. So I miss just slamming the laptop shut and cycling downhill and feeling like on top of the world.
Whizzing back home. Nice.
Yeah, whizzing back home. And instead, you know, my brother actually, his laptop's in his room and he's saying like when he can go to sleep, you can just see his work there. And I think that's the intimidating part of it. But yeah, I'm pro remote work. And I think I don't think this is remote work. Remote work is that you want a long weekend in Scotland. And so you take your laptop and you do one day either side. So you miss having to go like Friday, 8 p.m. and back Sunday. It allows you that freedom to be in the office when you want, when you need to be, kind of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Harry, earlier on, you mentioned that back in your uni days, you kind of advised a load of your friends and peers to buy into crypto and then we saw a 90% crash. Were people pretty unhappy with you at the time about that?
Yeah, I think there's been various moments throughout the time. The good thing is that no one is down ever. So as long as you've held and you bought at any point in the last 12 years, you're up. So
okay. Yeah, because that's what I wanted to ask you. You've kind of spoken a lot about wanting to kind of build trust in crypto and how you do that. I just wondered, have you managed to kind of engender trust again in those people who have sort of you've taken along for the ride that whole time?
Yeah, massively. And anyone that's taken the leap, is as long as they haven't bottled it, like as in once the 90% crash has gone, being like, right, I'm cutting my losses and getting out, they're all in a good position.
And I was going to ask you what advice you would give to your younger self, but I guess that advice would be buy 1 million bitcoins in the year 2007 and just hold on to them.
Yeah, 2009 it started. But I think
2009.
I think my younger self just like enjoy the journey. I think like you know that you want everything really suddenly, don't you? And then like actually, I think just know that eventually you are going to get there. Like I think it's been a long journey through. You know, like I guess in you know when I first heard about it all. And then I was going in, I really wanted it. And then I obviously lost passion for it for a few years while it crashed. And then in, I think it was 2016, 17, I was working at an event and I met this guy and I was like, oh, taking you for coffee. I want to work for your company. I'll do any role for blockchain.com. And then he was like, look, we're only hiring developers at the moment. I was like, oh, da, da, da. And then it was then that I realized that Luno were hiring marketing roles. And it was like that perseverance to keep going and knowing that if you want something enough, I think you will get it. Just make sure it's the right thing.
And last thing, I just want to ask you, I'm gonna hit you with a quick fire round, so I hope you're ready for that. But I just just before I do that, I just want to ask, is there anyone that working in the industry that you kind of particularly look up to?
Yeah, so I really look up to a guy called Barry Silver, and he was someone that I used to like heckle early days in crypto, and then he actually bought Luno. So that was a very funny experience. And then there's a guy called Eric Voorhees, who built one of the original crypto games. called Satoshi Dice, and now he runs a company called Shapeshift. And they're two people that I'm like, wow, they're real like early adopters. Yeah, and of course, sure. CZ. I love CZ. He's a bit like Marmite, but personally, I'm a fan of him.
CZ.
Yeah.
Who's that?
CZ, he is the founder of Binance, and okay. They are, and yeah, is he a bit of like a sort of a
maverick?
A maverick, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, nice. Well, yeah, Harry, thanks very much. I'm going to hit you with some quick fire questions now. So just to start off, Pret coffee or mug of tea?
Pret coffee, definitely.
Do you have a favorite emoji?
I think it's kind of like the sweat smile, semi-sweat smiley one.
The sort of drip on the head, yeah. Sweat on the head.
Yeah. Goes along with ask for forgiveness rather than permission. No.
Okay, fine. I won't press you on that too much. Netflix binge or Night on the Town?
Night on the Town, definitely.
Are you watching any series at the moment?
No, not really.
Oh, well, fair enough. Well, in that case, when lockdown ends, what's the first Night on the Town you're going to go to? What's your first venue?
I am going to my friend's event called Program, and he's like sort of released a sort of new sort of label. And yeah, it was meant to be a year ago. So I'm really excited to support this. I'm not sure I'm ready to be in a room with more than 100 people. It's
I know the feeling. What's on your bucket list? Or what's top of your bucket list?
Top of my bucket list is I want to get like a lot of the crypto circuit is like moving around, and I would love to get back traveling and see some of the really cool places. Lisbon, live there for a bit. Yeah, travel, work, mix the two. I can sort of, yeah, that's kind of the crypto dream, isn't it?
Okay, great. Yeah. And lastly, in a zombie film, how long do you think you'd last?
I reckon like 3/4 of the way.
Okay, that's not too bad then. You wouldn't be the first to go, but you wouldn't be the last to make it.
No, I reckon I'm about 3/4 of the way there. I'm not quite the last man, but I've got a few ideas up my sleeve to get me through it.
Okay. The only thing with that is I feel like the people that get sort of 3/4 of the way through are ones who kind of seem like they're doing well and then somehow crack.
Yeah, maybe.
Harry, thanks ever so much for joining us. And thank you very much for listening to this, the first episode of FinTech Mix. We've got plenty more great guests coming up. So if you enjoyed what you heard, please do like and subscribe. FinTech Mix is a podcast from Say Hello to Audio. To find out more about the podcast, visit fintechmix.com.